I'm Tom Hall. It's Friday, and it's midday. We are just under 7 weeks and counting to the start of early voting in Maryland's June primary election. Today, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates. Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz is my guest. He's one of 9 Democrats running in the primary for governor. No newcomer to politics, he's completing his second term as county executive after a 16-year tenure as a member of the Baltimore County Council. He points to his record of fiscal responsibility, advocacy for education, and job creation as his bona fides. His longstanding feuds with Governor Larry Hogan may end up serving as the backdrop for a general election bid. If Kamenetz triumphs in the crowded primary, will he have what it takes to unseat one of the most popular incumbents in the country? Kevin Kamenetz joins me for the hour when midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday on this Friday afternoon. Today, we're going to continue our series of conversations with the candidates who will be on the June 26th primary ballot here in Maryland. My guest is Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz. He announced his candidacy last September. He's one of 9 Democrats on the ballot in June. The winner will go up against Republican Governor Larry Hogan in the general election in November. Kevin Kamenetz is one of 3 major candidates in the race who is not a political outsider. He is completing his second term as county executive of Baltimore County. He was first elected in 2010 after serving 4 terms on the Baltimore County Council. Before entering politics, he was a prosecutor in the Baltimore City State's Attorney's Office. His running mate is Valerie Ervin, the first African-American woman to be elected to the Montgomery County Council and a longtime labor organizer. County Executive Kamenetz is 60 years old. He and his wife, Jill, live in Owings Mills with their 2 teenage sons. We are streaming live on the WYPR Facebook page, and we're going to begin taking your questions and comments a little later in the program. To get online on the phones, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and you can follow us on Twitter @MiddayWYPR. County Executive, it's good to see you, sir.
Good to be here.
Let's start first with a conversation about the profession of politics, because so many people use as a pitch for their outsider status, and there are several of those in this race, the fact that they have no experience in executive positions or even elective office. And they point to it as saying, we don't want politics as usual. You have been pointing to your very direct experience in elective office ever since you began this campaign. Answer those voters who might say, you know, somebody who's been in the game for 20 plus years like you, it's just going to be politics as usual.
Well, as one of the other candidates who has experience has put it, you know, when some of the other candidates were bemoaning career politicians, and I'm not a career politician, his answer was, well, let me ask you, if you have to go to a doctor for a heart ailment, are you going to go to a career cardiologist or someone who has no experience in that field? Look, as we see in the White House, president and governor are not entry-level positions.
And 2 county executives in somewhat recent memory have gone from that position to the governor. One is Paris Clendenin, who is Prince George's County County Executive. And the one before that, way before that, was Spiro Agnew, of all people, who held the job that you now hold. What is, because one of your opponents, Senator Modaleno, just last week said, you know, running a county government is very different than running the state. He, Mr. Modaleno, suggested that because of his legislative experience in the actual state legislature would make him more qualified. How would you respond to that?
Well, look, I have legislative experience in a very large county, 16 years on the county council, and now 8 years as the executive of one of the largest counties in the country. Baltimore County is actually larger in population than 4 states. So we're also a microcosm of the state. We mirror the state's demographics. We even mirror the state's geography in terms of urban, suburban, rural, farmland. We have 200 miles of waterfront and 2,000 miles of streams and tributaries. So most of the issues that I faced in Baltimore County are really issues that I would be facing as governor. It's a big county, okay? It's a $4 billion corporation with 20,000 employees and 830,000 shareholders, each of whom own the company.
And it's not as if you don't have any experience going down to Annapolis and making the case for Baltimore County to the state legislature.
Yeah, and actually, I not only have always done that on behalf of Baltimore County, but I just finished up my term as the president of the Maryland Association of Counties. So I've represented all of the counties before the General Assembly. In fact, I don't know where these 24 years went by so quickly, but not only was I the president of MACO, but I am currently its longest serving continuous member. And with that experience, you have institutional history. You have faced challenges in the past, and you understand why those decisions were made. And how can you make them in a better way?
In terms of translating that experience into political leadership at this moment in time, I think, for example, about the $15 minimum wage, which is a proposal that you and several of your other opponents in this race support. It's had a very difficult time passing in the legislature. It failed again this year, and it's not the first time that people have tried to get it through. There are individual jurisdictions who have implemented that, and this is, of course, a phase-in to the minimum wage. It wouldn't happen for several years. Here in Baltimore City, Mayor Catherine Pugh made what she's described as a difficult decision to veto the Baltimore City Council's approval of a $15 minimum wage for the city. With a bill like that, can you envision as governor a scenario that you can convince the legislature that it's time? And how would that scenario work?
Well, first, let me just say that it's unreasonable that someone should be able to or have to work full time and still live in poverty. And frankly, with a $10 minimum wage, that really is struggling for a lot of people. So ultimately, yes, you want to phase in a minimum wage that reaches $15. I just think the General Assembly wasn't willing to do that in this election year. But a well thought out plan that allows businesses to adapt, I think, will be successful at some point.
You've talked about ending corporate welfare when you talk about some of your economic development plans. Governor Hogan talks about Maryland being open for business. Those are two very different messages to the corporate and business community. Can you expand a little bit about what corporate welfare means? And can you anticipate some reticence or some problems with it from the business community?
Well, listen, he uses those words, but there's no action behind it. So it's just a slogan. It's Larry's slogan at it again. Here's the real issue, and this is why experience counts. I've had $5 billion of private investment take place in Baltimore County during the last 6.5 years, 7 years. We've done it in a different way, as opposed to writing blank checks to corporations and calling that economic development. We focused on job skill training. So we go to our large employers and we find out who are they hiring. And then through our Job Connector program, we use our high schools, our trade schools, and our community college to train people to acquire the skills for the jobs that are out there so that when they graduate, they graduate not just with a diploma in their hand, but an opportunity for a job in their hand. And we've been able to cut our unemployment rate in half in Baltimore County. This is why McCormick Spice, which could locate anywhere in the world, is opening up a new headquarters building with 900 employees moving in there. Why Stanley Black & Decker is now adding 600 jobs to Baltimore County on the east side. And why Bank of America is adding 200 jobs in Hunt Valley. We work closely with our employers, find out what their workforce needs are, and by having a steady supply of talent, these employers not only are going to stay here, but they're going to grow.
Was the governor or the state legislature involved in those deals as well? I mean, at what point does the capacity of the governor, should you be elected to that position after this primary and a general election, what is the capacity of that person in that job to also, you know, sow the seeds that could result in the kinds of results you're talking about?
Well, I would bring this job skill training, this job connector program statewide. It does not currently exist in the form that we now do it. In fact, it's one of the most unique programs in the country. Look, there are opportunities where you can give incentives to businesses. I'm not saying that that's wholly unwarranted, but it just shouldn't be your primary policy. So there are instances where Governor Hogan keeps handing out money. It requires a 10% match by the county, and I'm not going to micromanage Governor Hogan's deal making in that sense. So we have cooperated with that because I think that was my responsibility to do so. But I just see things in a different way, and I wouldn't do it the same way he's doing it.
I've asked all of the other candidates in this race this very question, but Democratic voters in the primary are going to need to make a decision based in part on the person they think is best suited to beat a very popular incumbent governor. I mean, he's got 70-something percent approval rating that he's had for now some years. Nationally, he's known as the second most popular governor in the country behind the other Republican governor of a Democratic state, the guy in Massachusetts. Even in Baltimore County, your county, polls indicate an 85% approval rating for Larry Hogan. He bills himself as a bipartisan, you know, practitioner of the art of politics. How do you overcome that kind of popularity? How do you beat Larry Hogan in a way that perhaps the other six major candidates in this race wouldn't be able to do?
You know, first of all, when someone calls themselves bipartisan, that should always be a red flag. It's not like I hear Democrats other than Peter Franchot. I'm not sure he's actually a Democrat anymore, but I don't hear any Democrat calling Larry Hogan bipartisan. In fact, it was interesting. I was just reading an article in yesterday's Daily Record where they were talking about redistricting and this great effort. You know, Larry Hogan's touting himself how bipartisan he is and that he wants to have a commission. And when he takes over redistricting, it's going to be done in, you know, in a bipartisan fashion. But then in the same article, he says, and I'm going to redistrict out those Democrats who are fighting me to get this done. So, you know, that's typical hypocrisy that I think.
Well,
comes
and if
him.
Ever there were a partisan issue, it's redistricting.
Yeah. So it's look, this is a Democratic state. We have a 2-to-1 Democrat-Republican registration edge, and the only time the Democrats lose are when they don't turn out. And 120,000 fewer Democrats turned out last time. So if there's one thing I have great confidence in President Trump, it's that he's going to continue to motivate Democrats.
What would be different? Obviously, in a field as crowded as the one we have, 9 total candidates, 7 of you considered really major contenders. You and County Executive Baker in Prince George's County, perhaps the two best known going into the race, maybe Ben Jealous because of his national profile with the NAACP, in terms of name recognition, that sort of thing. But you've all got the very difficult task of distinguishing yourself from each other. So what's different about a Kamenetz governorship than a Baker or a Jealous or a Jim Shea administration?
Well, look, the bottom line is I've got a track record of real results. And I think that's important because you get a sense of someone's priorities and not really just what they promise, but what they've actually been able to deliver. And that gives you a sense of what they can actually do as governor. So as county executive, I've improved our schools. We have record school construction, building or rebuilding 90 schools. We've got rising graduation rates that now exceed the state average, approaching 90%. And importantly, in our very diverse school system in Baltimore County, there is no difference in the graduation rates between black and white students. I've improved our economy. I mean, cut our unemployment rate in half through this Creative Job Connector program. And I protected the environment in creative ways. You know, we're trying to put solar panels in our closed landfills and county rooftops to reduce our carbon footprint, but also save taxpayer dollars and reduce energy costs. And I've done all of this without ever raising the tax rates. So in my 24 years in office, we've never once raised the property tax rate or the income tax rate. I'm running with Valerie Ervin, who, as you mentioned, is a Montgomery County Councilwoman, but also previously was elected to the Board of Education in Montgomery County. And when she was on the council, she chaired their education committee. And she has great policy chops in the field of education and working families. We're running because we're not only the most experienced ticket, we also have that bold and thoughtful vision of where we need to take our state forward. And the issues are kind of the same. You're going to hear all the candidates mention it, but it's really who can get this done. And that's improving our educational outcomes, but also building an economy that helps promote working families. And really, quite frankly, standing up to Donald Trump's version of America.
Kevin Kamenetz is the county executive in Baltimore County and my guest for the hour here on Midday. He was first elected to the county council in 1994. He's completing his second term as Baltimore County executive. He's one of nine Democrats running in the June primary for the chance to face Republican Governor Larry Hogan in the general election in November. More with Kevin Kamenetz when we come back from a break. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org, to find us on Twitter @MiddayWYPR. We are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday on our program, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Delegate Pat McDonough, a Republican running for Baltimore County Executive. Plus, Kamau High and Sean Yost of the Afro-American newspaper join me for the Afro Check-In. That's coming up Monday on Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is the current Baltimore County Executive, Kevin Kamenetz. He's one of nine candidates running in the June primary to be the Democratic nominee for governor. By the way, you can hear all of our conversations with the candidates at wypr.org/Midday. You are welcome to be part of our conversation with County Executive Kamenetz. 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wypr.org. Find us on Twitter @MiddayWYPR, and you can follow us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming all the action here from Studio A. County Executive, we have an email from Ann, who is a current constituent of yours in Baltimore County. Please address your environmental record, particularly in light of your removal of 30 mature trees, seven of them over 30 inches in diameter, last April at the Towson Gateway, the former site of the Baltimore County Fire Station. After the County Council passed a resolution in December of 2016 to protect the trees, the site was to be sold as is, but instead, the county spent $170,000 to take down the trees. What do you think?
Well, the tree issue is really just a red herring. When I've seen this a lot of times, when communities want to fight a development, they suddenly wrap themselves around any potential issue to create a roadblock. But the reality is that I don't think anyone was enjoying trees that were located between a fire station and a public works depot on a very busy corner, commercial corner of York and Bosley. So the reality is that the county had to replace the fire station. It was built in 1958, and it didn't have drive-through bays. And interestingly, it did not have facilities for female firefighters. That's how old it was. So normally the old way for the county would be to borrow money and build a new fire station on the existing site. So we decided, rather than to spend that $5 million of county funds, that we would actually sell this heavily traveled commercial corner. And we did a public bid, and We then use the proceeds to build a new fire station on existing county-owned land. So we think that was a creative way of saving taxpayer dollars. And also, once you build that commercial entity there, they pay property taxes and employ people, too. So the real issue with our environmental record, though, it's a strong one. We spend $26 million annually in Baltimore County planting trees, rebuilding eroding stream beds, and even using street sweepers to pick up trash to prevent runoff to the bay. We own and operate our own recycling center, and it's so successful we're taking in other jurisdictions' recycled materials, and we're generating almost $2 million back to the county treasury. All of these things are designed not only to, you know, showing that we're saving the environment, but we're also saving taxpayer dollars at the same time. And that's the key here. That's why we have a stable tax rate in Baltimore County, and we're still able to do this record investment in school construction and other great things.
When you talk about, for example, cleaning up the bay, this is something that governors for many decades now have attempted to do. And one of the problems is that the bay, you know, which is so big and so covers so many miles, also goes through six different states. Talk to Tom Pelton, who's an environmental reporter and advocate, about a book he just wrote about the Chesapeake Bay. And he says one of the big problems is Pennsylvania, and that their legislature very reluctant to put in regulations for the farmers there. So there's all sorts of runoff in Pennsylvania that comes downstream to Maryland, whereas the Maryland regulations are considerably more strict. But it doesn't almost do any good because it's not as strict in a neighboring state. Give us an example of how you might negotiate a deal with Pennsylvania, Virginia, New York, New Jersey, places where the Chesapeake Bay also touches.
I would pursue an action through the EPA and have the federal government come in and require the other states to do what we're doing here in Maryland. So I think that's the better approach to try and get the other states' attention. And if we had someone other than President Trump in office, I think we can try and get that accomplished. The Chesapeake Bay is a $30 billion annual economic impact to the state of Maryland. So it's vitally important to us, and it's in terms of the fishery, recreational, and also real estate. And it's a crucial resource for us. And obviously, you know, it allows us to have the Port of Baltimore and so many other assets. And the Port of Baltimore is a $60 billion annual economic impact to the state of Maryland. So the health of the bay is essential for us. It's an obligation we have not only for ourselves, but to maintain it for future generations. And I feel like we're moving in the wrong direction under Governor Hogan. The first thing he did when he took office was to loosen the regulations for big chicken, and they're the primary source of phosphorus in the Chesapeake Bay. We have to get a handle on that, but we also have to do other things. Like, I would double the oyster sanctuary population. Oysters are like tiny vacuum cleaners, and 100 years ago, they filtered the bay every 24 hours. So the whole idea of adding oyster sanctuaries isn't necessarily to increase the number of oysters, but to provide that stable resource and let that grow naturally. Governor Hogan wants to allow the fishery industry to rapture the existing sanctuaries. So it's just the wrong approach. It's not a big picture thought process here.
But do you put those folks out of business in the meantime?
Well, they're going to be out of business at some point if we don't take steps to increase the population. So I recognize their current plight, but you always have to look at the big picture. I mean, even the crab population, Governor Hogan fired this woman who was head of the crab manager program. Management program. So what happened was the fishery industry wanted to have the state reduce the size of the jimmies, you know, the male crabs. Less than 5.5 inches point to point. And this woman said no. They complained to Governor Hogan, and Governor Hogan fired the woman. And she was very polite in the paper. She said, "Well, you know, I don't make the rules. I just enforce them." And geez, you know what? I've been working for the state for 28 years. I would have hoped that he would have just reassigned me to a different agency as opposed to firing me, because I just needed two more years to fully vest in my benefits. So, you know, this is the mentality that's taking place here. You know, we're not paying attention to the chicken manure runoff on the Eastern Shore. We're not protecting the resources within the bay, our crab and oyster population. We're not aggressively pursuing efforts to stop runoff. I'm going to save the bay again if I'm governor.
Kevin Kamenetz is my guest. He's the county executive in Baltimore County. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Find us on Twitter at @MiddayWYPR. You can follow us live on the WYPR Facebook page. Mr. Kamenetz is one of nine folks running for the Democratic nominee to be the governor, the candidate for governor, against Larry Hogan in November. Let's go to Dave in Towson. Dave, you have a question about the Baltimore County budget. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
How are you doing, Kevin?
Hi, Dave.
By saying the property tax rate has been 1.1 for 24 years doesn't mean your tax payments have not been rising for 24 years. Mathematically, you're actually paying 3.4% because you keep adding that tenth every year. I know the rainy day fund is at 8%, and there's a 0 to 1% chance of the credit downgrade. So could you tell the county council on Tuesday to use the constant yield rate going forward? Because the county has paid the 1.1 for 24 years under Jim Smith and under yourself and Dutch. Can we do that? And that would put $17.5 million into consumers' hands for their children, for gas, for food, and health care insurance.
Well, Dave, managing a large budget like this in an aging county that requires continual reinvestment is a challenging one. And yet the experts tell us that we are fiscally well managed. We are just one of 46 counties across the country to have the highest credit rating from all three rating agencies. Rating agencies, of course, don't like to see reductions in the tax rate. They want to see increases in the revenue base. Our challenge is that we don't get a triple-triple-A based upon our affluence. We get it based upon tough decisions and fiscal management. So I'm proud that we've been able to maintain a stable tax rate. 1 year, 2 years ago, I believe, I did submit a budget that did meet the constant yield. It is a slight reduction, I suspect, from the current rate. The assessments are actually based upon the State Department of Assessment and Taxation. So we set the rate, but the state does the property assessments and once every 3 years. And, you know, there was a period when I took office that we had declining revenue sources from both property tax and income tax, and that was very challenging for us. But when the state assesses your property, it goes up. Theoretically, that means the value of your property is going up, and ultimately that is more affluence for you at some point. But I recognize your issue. Look, it's, you know, everyone's struggling now. It's a tough economy, particularly for the middle class, and you know, we're. Please recognize that we're working hard to work within our limits, but also making investments that really have been deferred for dozens of years. I mean, this, you know, I talked about this $1.3 billion I'm putting into our schools. You know, we had the second oldest school inventory in the state when I took office. We're also putting $1.5 billion in aging pipes for sewer and water, replacing them. You know, all these things came due on my tenure, and I'm making the proper investments that we have to make, all without raising the tax rates.
Let me talk to you about the schools issue in Baltimore County, because it's been a very heated issue when I talk to the folks who are running to replace you in the position of county executive. And several of them, Democrats, have said, we can't build all these schools at the same time. We can't build a new Delaney. We can't build a new Lansdowne. We can't build a new Towson High School. We've got to have a plan here. And they're, frankly, in my estimation, dancing around which one is the priority, which one you build first. They point to a change of heart that you had about Delaney High School, for example, originally not for a rebuild and then became for a rebuild a while later. Talk about your political philosophy and how you approach that particular issue, because like anything, as far, obviously if you're running a state, maybe something that's good for Montgomery County is going to come at the expense of something in Baltimore City. If you build Lansdowne High School instead of Delaney, there are winners and losers. How do you approach that?
So when I took office, I had not only these aging buildings, but rising enrollment in kids in trailers. And I knew that 8 years would go by very fast. And I wanted to think about what could be the most significant investment I can make as county executive that really benefits the county long term. So we decided that school construction would be that significant investment. And we used to do it in a whack-a-mole fashion that, oh, there's a problem at this school, let's put an addition on it. Oops, here comes another school, we got to now put an addition. And I actually took it as a comprehensive analysis of where we have overcrowding, where we have to build seats, and where we have to renovate schools. So we've tried to touch almost every one of our 173 schools in some fashion. So we not only have built or rebuilt 90 schools, we're also adding 6,000 additional seats for future capacity. Notwithstanding this great effort that is consistent throughout the county, we've resolved the elementary school issue, we've resolved the middle school issue. We now have to start taking on, in this next term after me, the high school issue in a more comprehensive way. So we are renovating or building 4 high schools right now, but we have additional capacity needs for at least 2 new high schools. And they are in the Central Corridor and the Northeast Corridor. And frankly, we're going to have some high school needs in the Southeast as well. So I anticipate the need for at least 2 new high schools, perhaps 3, to add additional seats. It's all about capacity. And I put in planning money for those, for 2 new high schools. Obviously, they're going to have to be staged with it so that it's affordable. New high school is $130 million. But one thing we have always been consistent with this program is we're only building new schools when we are adding seats or otherwise consolidating 2 older schools. If not, we're doing renovations. So we did a great job renovating. We built 2 new high schools, one in Dundalk and one in Towson at Carver. We've renovated 2 high schools, one at Hereford and one at Pikesville. And we're currently renovating a school in the Southeast and Woodlawn High in the west side of the county.
All right, before we take a break, let's go to Facebook. Alexandra is evidently a Republican. And she says, I'm disappointed in the utter and total disregard of the Republican voter by Mr. Kamenetz earlier in our conversation. Rather than try and convince us to vote for him, he's just counting on the Democratic vote to silence our voice. Make the pitch to the Republican voter, those Republicans in your very county, Baltimore County, who are highly supportive of Governor Hogan. Why should they change their mind this time around?
Well, Alexandra, first of all, recognize that I'm running in a Democratic primary, so obviously that's the target universe for me for the next 60 days. But I think in terms of my tenure as county executive, I've gotten really strong support from those who identify with the Republican Party because they see someone who is a tell-it-like-it-is guy, who gets things done, who focuses on the proper priorities, and hasn't raised the tax rates. So I welcome your support.
Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz is a Democratic candidate running for governor of Maryland. His running mate is Valerie Irvin, a longtime labor organizer and the first African-American woman to serve on the Montgomery County Council. You can join our conversation when we come back from a break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. You can join us on Twitter @MiddayWIPR, and you can find us on the WIPR Facebook page where we are streaming live. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. If you've just joined us, we are continuing our series of conversations with the candidates today with Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz. He was elected to that office in 2010 after serving four terms on the Baltimore County Council. His opponents in the June primary include Krish Vignaraja, Rishern Baker, Rich Madalino, Ben Jealous, Alec Ross, Jim Shea, and two others. If you have questions for Mr. Kamenetz, our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming. So, County Executive, we have an email here, a long email from Naomi in Parkville. I can't read the whole thing because it is too long, but she is very unsettled by this terrible, alarming story that happened just a few days ago, in which four teenage girls carjacked a teacher as she came out of her school up in Parkville. So she's worried about crime. She's worried about that happening in Baltimore County. But on the larger issue, in terms of the state, there was a very controversial bill in the legislature this past session, SB 122, the Senate Bill 122, that was sponsored by a Democrat from Baltimore County, Bobby Zirkin, endorsed by the governor. And much of that bill emphasized incarceration. It emphasized so-called truth in sentencing, meaning making parole more difficult for people convicted and incarcerated to be released, and called for mandatory minimums. That bill did not pass. Instead, a somewhat watered-down version of it passed that was sponsored by Delegate Talmadge Branch, whose own family was directly affected by violence. He lost a grandson, I believe, to murder. What's your take on what can be done at the state level to help cities like Baltimore, communities like Parkville, reduce violence and become safer?
Well, first of all, it was, you know, an upsetting story. Of course, our county police immediately caught these four girls who were from Baltimore City, and I'm, you know, we have a great police department and they do a great job. And it, you know, despite having the largest population ever, crime is at record lows in Baltimore County. But the big picture, the global picture for a governor is we have to come up with solutions that prevent the incarceration process, the criminal justice process, from starting. And that gets back to education. Interestingly, I went to Valerie and I went to talk to a support group. We were at North and Pennsylvania Avenue, the site of the Freddie Gray uprising, and we were speaking to a group, Mothers of Murdered Sons, moms. And I was trying to express, you know, obviously I talked about education and where I think that that is the key to helping people move above their current situation, and talked about the great stuff that's happening in Baltimore County. We're giving every child laptop technology. We're asking our fourth graders to start taking a foreign language so that they, when they graduate, they're fluent in that second language. Talking about our early college high school program, where we have ninth graders at Woodlawn High who within 4 years will not only get a high school diploma, but an associate's degree from the Community College of Baltimore County, all tuition free. So, I also talked about how we need to have pre-K, universal pre-K for 3- and 4-year-olds. I want you to think about this. 40% of Maryland students don't get enough nourishment at home, and they have to rely on our schools for breakfast and lunch, for free breakfast and lunch. 20% of our toddlers don't get any academic preparation at home, and when they start their school career, they're already behind grade level. So, you know, focusing on opportunities to have community schools, you know, in this past budget, I just added $8 million to hire 108 positions of school psychologists and social workers and behavioral health interventionalists to help provide these additional resources the teachers need to help these kids before they wind up bringing a gun to a school. So I'm going through all of this, and all of a sudden, you know, a young man was in that audience, and he raised his hand, and he looked to be about 14 or 15. He said, well, This school stuff, it's all well and good, but let me tell you what my day's like. When I go to school, I worry on my way that I'm going to get hurt. When I leave school, I worry which of my friends are going to get shot. Look, I do some stuff that, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing, but you have to understand, I'm not going to college. I don't have a future. I'm not going to be able to do things. I'll probably be dead in 5 years.
And how do you respond to that?
It just reinforced my belief that the governor has not only a legal obligation to educate our children, but a moral obligation to make sure that every child is given the opportunity to succeed. And we can't write that off.
The revenues of the state of Maryland in 2000, what they're projected to be in 2018, what they've been in 2017, 16, with a fairly booming economy, are they going to be sufficient to have early childhood education? Are they going to be sufficient to have free community college for everybody? You and several other candidates in the race are calling for that. Where does the money come from?
When you set a budget, you set priorities. And so that's why, again, having someone who has experience is important in government. And I've set the priorities with education and job creation, and I've done it without raising the tax rates. We can make those same investments statewide. It's just a function of where we prioritize our investment. You know, when I build these new schools, it's great for, you know, for the kids and the educators getting a modern learning environment. But I'm also, every time I build a new school or renovate a school, I'm rebuilding neighborhoods because it gives someone a reason to move into that neighborhood. I mean, think about this. We're about to open a brand new Lansdowne Elementary School, and it's a challenging area there. Challenging demographics. You know, you're not only giving these kids a great chance with this brand new school there, but you're also giving a reason for people to move into Lansdowne. And I think that's a good return on investment for the county. By the same token, in the state, we make these proper investments now, we're going to be spending a lot less in our criminal justice system, and we're going to have people who are out there who are employed and paying income and property taxes.
Are there things right off the bat, though, that we're spending money on that we shouldn't? As you say, and no one would disagree, that a budget is an expression of one's priorities. So are there priorities that are in the current budget under the current administration that shouldn't be there?
Well, let me name two areas that I think are very wishful on perhaps the governor's part, and I don't think are good long-term investments. He's proposing to spend $9 billion to somehow widen the Washington Beltway and the arteries there. And I don't think it's physically feasible because you've got parks and hospitals and homes in the way, but it's just not the right long-term investment to make because mass transit is really the future, and you know we in the Baltimore area know that particularly better than anyone else because we don't have a functioning mass transit system here in Baltimore, and the governor just took away that opportunity for jobs and investment and gave us color-coded buses instead. I mean, it's silly. The other part is giving $8.5 billion to Amazon, whose owner is the richest man on planet Earth. You know, what else could we have spent money or made investments in a better way that would have been a better return on investment?
But should Amazon take the deal for Maryland if we beat out the other 19 states that are very aggressively lobbying Amazon? Is that a good deal, or will that, in your estimation, have been a bad deal? Did we give away the store to get the store?
You know, you have to do these cost-benefit analyses. I would have spent those billions on building up our educational system and graduating people with the skills for the jobs that are out there, and Amazon would want to come here because we have a highly trained workforce as a result. That's how you really attract business. Giving these giveaways, blank checks, I mean, that's a game that doesn't promote loyalty.
How about the red line? Governor Hogan famously killed it. Is there a way of resurrecting that project absent the many hundreds of millions of dollars of federal support that was available at one time?
Well, we're going to have to obviously get back in queue with that. I mean, it's really sad that the governor passed up $900 million of federal money that was just waiting for us, and then took the $900 million of state money that had been devoted toward mass transit solutions in the Baltimore region, and he dispersed it to rural road projects and left us still stuck in traffic. So it's just not a thoughtful approach here. The idea of mass transit isn't just to ease traffic congestion, but it also allows people to get to work on time and promotes economic development. I built the region's only transit-oriented development in Owings Mills. I took the surface parking lot of the subway system and turned it into, and I put a library there and a community college, and now it's a $650 million investment that has retail and apartments and an office building and restaurants. And it really is the future, the next generation who doesn't want to own a home, doesn't want to own a car. The only thing they want to own is a phone. And those are the people who are going to be our employees of the future. And we have to make sure that this state is equipped to handle that.
We have time for a quick call from Colin, who I understand is a member of the Greenbelt City Council about mass transit. Colin, welcome to the program. If you could make a quick comment, we'd be grateful.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you, County Executive Cam. It is, and I appreciate what I've heard from you on a couple of issues, including immigration, sick leave, and the fight for 15. I wanted to ask you, because this is an issue of particular concern to the residents in my community, as well as around Prince George's County, what your position was on the maglev, whether or not you oppose the maglev.
That's the magnetic levitation train that can supposedly get us from Washington to Baltimore in 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's a nice science fiction concept here, but the reality is it's very expensive and disruptive. The route is disruptive to homeowners or proposed route. I think our better investment is using our existing mass transit opportunities with rail to try and make our connections. So the Washington area has a great multi-jurisdictional mass transit system. What we need to do is, and I know we have service issues there from a lack of investment, what we need to do is make those connections. So, you know, Charles County needs a link to get into Prince George's County. Montgomery County needs links to Howard County and to Frederick County. And frankly, we need links from Harford County into Baltimore County and from Howard County into Baltimore area. That's how you really put this together. And, you know, it's interesting. The governor's talking about paying a lot of money for a third span of the Bay Bridge. Maybe we should be having a conversation that allows for a rail link across the Chesapeake Bay and have a route through Route 50. That's how you make investments for the future.
Kevin Kamenetz, he is the county executive in Baltimore County. He's finishing up his second term in that office after serving for 16 years on the Baltimore County Council. He's one of nine Democrats running in the June primary for the chance to face incumbent Republican Governor Larry Hogan in November's general election. We've got a link to the Kevin Kamenetz website at wypr.org/midday. Mr. Kamenetz, it's good to see you, sir.
KevinForMaryland.com.
There are two candidates forums coming up. You guys have been busy, and Ms. Vignaraja has been busy on that circuit. Two coming up just this weekend on Sunday afternoon from noon to 2:30 over in Charles County. The Charles County Democratic Central Committee is sponsoring a forum in Waldorf. And then Monday night at 7 o'clock at the Charlestown Retirement Community in Catonsville. There's another one. Come to our website again, wypr.org/midday, and we'll have details about those two events. The election is 60 days from today, and early voting starts 12 days before that. That's it for us today. Coming up on the program on Monday, our series of conversations with the candidates continues with Pat McDonough. He's one of two Republicans running to replace Kevin Kamenetz as the next Baltimore County executive. Plus, Kamau High and Sean Yost of the Afro-American newspaper join us for the Afro Check-In. That's all coming up Monday. On Midday, we want to thank Bottoms Up Bagels for bringing lunch today. Bottoms Up is a small-batch pop-up bagel shop preparing hand-rolled New Jersey-style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses inspired by the traditions of bagel making dating way back to the 1940s. Available at the Waverly and JFX Farmers Markets and online at bottomsupbagels.com. Midday.com. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknall. Rob Sivak, Sienna Greaves, and Kathleen Cahill produce our program. Jamila Kremple is our digital producer. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.